Today's program is brought to you by Regional Access. Regional Access is a regional distributor committed to creating sustainable economies throughout the Northeast. For more information, visit regionalaccess.net.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
What's up, everyone? Derek Evers, Chris Robbins, another exciting edition of Nothing Urgent. I'm a little verklempt today. I've got a little vacation sore throat.
Sound like you've been smoking those Misty 100s again?
No, I've been a week of detox in Florida.
Doing what?
Going to football games, playing golf, living the life of leisure in a retirement community, actually.
Really?
Yeah. I was at the Villages, which is the largest retirement community.
Are we supposed
to
know what the Villages is? Right, sorry. You were just explaining that.
Yes. It's not only is it the largest retirement community in Florida, it has just surpassed 100,000 people. So now it is actually a metropolis.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, all the Republicans come down there and, not debate, what's the word, when they like primaries, you know, what do you call that? You know, you're a political
campaign.
Leader. Yes, they go down there to campaign because they carry so much Republican clout.
And who lives there?
My uncle. My uncle told me I'm his second favorite liberal.
Who's his first?
It's this other guy he met. He says he only knows. He told me
you're going to be like Will Ferrell or something.
It was a joke. He said, and then he followed that up by saying, "Well, I've only met two." So it was a bad joke, but at the same time, yeah.
Does his house smell like mothballs?
No, you got it's. It is the most bizarre thing, and it's kind of like. The Stepford Wives or something. Everything is like very perfect there. It's like they've got all these golf courses and community activities for all the old people. And I walked into a CVS like right when I got there, actually to try to get something for my throat. And I walk in and like everyone just looks at me. And I realize at that moment that I'm 30 years younger than everyone else in the place. It was really bizarre. But it was fun. I'm tan now for it.
Yeah. Yeah, you look great.
Thank you. We have a great show today. We're joined by the always amazing Marnie Stern.
Hi.
And later we have, in a few minutes, we're going to have Harry Siegel from the Daily News talk about
New York City. How old are you, Derek?
That's a topic we don't really discuss too often.
Why don't you guess, Marnie? Guess.
Young, I'd say. You look young.
See, but come on, what's the number? Give us a number.
I'm staying in the 20s.
Wow. Mm. I like Marnie Stern. Mm. Marnie Stern's got to come on more often.
30s?
Yeah.
A little?
Well, not 40s.
Not 40s.
Well, I mean, for the show's sake, we usually say I'm like in my 60s or 70s, so.
How old are you?
That's a
number.
Come on,
just say it. Just say it.
I am 36 years old.
Mm.
So. Joe, our producer, is clapping. He's very proud of me for fessing up to that fact.
Mm-hmm. I'm 26, so we're like a whole decade.
I know.
Isn't that weird how old Derek is compared to you?
Actually, when you say that, it makes me feel bad because everyone else in the imposed community is about 26, so I am kind of old.
Yeah, you should feel bad about it.
There was some. Oh, and before we get with Harry,
yeah,
we're going to. I pointed you to introduce him because I was going to say Henry at first, so that's a good reason that you said that.
Man, Florida really fucked you up.
It did. I know. You think the detox would have helped, but it didn't. I was just I'm ready for retirement now.
Doesn't Derek like mispronounce somebody's name like every episode though?
We'll edit that out.
Okay.
But what I was going to say is this is also a big holiday week for Impose.
Explain.
Well, we have our holiday party tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
And then the big
show. No one else is invited to, by the way.
Yeah,
no one's not invited to that holiday.
You're not invited because there's going to be free alcohol, and then there might be people doing things that.
Yeah, you can't drink all of it.
Like someone will be making out with Santa, and then it will get back to the company. And isn't that what they always say at those, you know, company parties?
What else makes it a holiday?
And then on Saturday, we have a show we're doing at the Brooklyn Bazaar.
Who's playing that show, Derek?
Well, thanks for asking, Chris. It's actually Diarrhea Planet, Purling Hiss, Big Ups, and Manners.
Wow.
Yeah, it's going to be a good
one. How much would a bill like
Wait,
that cost?
Where is this? And when? Where is this?
This is Brooklyn Bazaar. I don't want to get into too many details I actually, I was going to say, I actually inquired about one Marnie Stern to play on that show.
You did?
But apparently you've got business people that keep us from reaching.
Got lots of middlemen.
I don't have a band here right now.
Yeah, that's what they said.
Yeah.
That was the answer we got.
But Derek, how much would it cost to see that show that you just described?
Oh, it's not. It's free.
Oh, wow.
I don't know the last time Impo's done a show.
I want to go.
It's Saturday from what, 7 to 12. It's at the Brooklyn Bazaar.
When
which
does
is
DP it. Go on?
They go on around 11.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the other reason, because I've known the last time they played New York, you got up on stage with them
twice, two shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shea Stadium. You DJ'd.
I did.
No way.
Yes way.
He was full circle.
Yes way. I know.
Huh. The circle of life. And Dana, our senior editor, I'm just going to throw this out there. She's in. I'm getting the phone call signal. But give me 1 second really quick. I just got to say this one thing. Dana, our senior editor, is sitting in with us today.
Do I say anything? Can I come in here?
Yeah, you can say something.
Hey, I'm here.
And she's here. Just to be a supporter, but
hi, Dana.
But she also plays in Manners, who will be opening the show. Yeah. So I just want to throw that out there.
And now let's talk about the New York City Police Department. Apropos of whatever, we have Harry Siegel, who's an editorial columnist and a writer for the New York Daily News. Are you on the line, Harry?
Yes, I am.
Welcome. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So your column today was about police transparency, which someone says that and a lot of people's eyes will roll into the back of their heads. But it's a big issue because the police department is traditionally very opaque and guards their information and they are secretive and so on and so forth. You are confident or at least hopeful that the new police commissioner, Bill Bratton, is going to be a little more open with the department's information and, you know, their relationship with the press. Can you describe why that is?
Well, there's a couple reasons there. First off, Bratton and Kelly have a very long-standing rivalry. This will be the second time Bratton will have followed Kelly as commissioner. And each of them likes to point to distinctions with the other. In practice, their policing tactics have a fair amount in common. Stops rose significantly in Los Angeles when Bratton was there. He had a plan to map the Muslim community that I think was probably built off of Kelly's here. One distinction the two of them have always had is that Bratton is much less of a top-down manager. And under Kelly, the department has really become much more secretive and tightly controlled from the top. So I expect that much will change, and there'll be a bit of a honeymoon period during which Bratton will want to show the press at least symbolic openness. But then it's not really in his interest to do so, but this seems like the right moment to start trying to pry that open and put a little pressure on him to do right. I think a lot of the concerns and suspicions people have about the department can really be cleared up by having more information about actual crimes out there in a open and verifiable way that outside people can look at.
So, go ahead.
You get around a lot of the questions about whether the numbers are getting juked and if things are as they appear, at least on the margins, if that's open and available. So this seems like the time to press Brad in there before he's too entrenched and comfortable.
And, you know, basically Kelly had carte blanche. Bloomberg let him do whatever he wanted to. And, you know, the Muslim surveillance program sort of arose from that. The stop sort of rose on that same justification that Kelly could do whatever he want. What do you think? I mean, is Bratton also going to be able to sort of write a blank check for however he wants to police the city?
Well, blank check is a telling phrase there. Bloomberg was a really exceptional mayor. We're not going to have a 12-year mayor again. We'll never have a 12-year commissioner again, and we never had before. So this was a really unique setting, and one of the things Bloomberg did was he cut very big checks to lots of community groups and people who were potentially points of outrage. So Carnegie, which was sort of Bloomberg's bagman for a lot of this, paid an awful lot of money to Al Sharpton over those 12 years, and that paid off, and that's not a natural or normal circumstance. So no, I don't think Bratton will have quite as much leeway. I don't think anyone will.
And, you know, it's like, what, 20 days or something until de Blasio is inaugurated in office.
I just learned he's going to live in Gracie Mansion on my plane ride. That was breaking news, by the way.
By the way, were you surprised by that, Harry?
I was bored. I was bored by that whole thing. I don't know why he made it into a long conversation piece and then a long decision process.
I mean,
he should live wherever he wants to.
Right. I mean, and that's sort of Yeah, I mean, whether or not he lived in Gracie Mansion or in Brooklyn, it was sort of distracting to sort of, you know, let people talk about him being in a mansion any longer than it needed to be.
Yes.
But okay, so 20 days until he's mayor, the police commissioner last week, or the department, sort of started pulling these crime reports that they've always given to reporters for time memoriam. The city tonight, like a last minute 5 o'clock press release, sort of announced that they're going through this appeal for stop and frisk. Why the rear guard action? You know, does Bloomberg's ego really, is it that bruised? And, you know, why are we seeing this sort of like recriminatory behavior with 20 days left in office?
So I wrote about the, about taking away the precinct reports today, and ended up having, after publishing, a long conversation with a couple people at the department about that, and they were emphatic and did not push back on other more critical things I was saying, that had been pretty badly misinterpreted, and that, in fact, that information flow is still there. So taking them at their word on that, with rear guard actions in general, with the subpoena that just went out to Graham Raymond, formerly right. The Village Voice, some of this just happens at the end, and some of it is trying to consolidate or set the terms for whoever comes in next. Frankly, I think it is appalling that de Blasio, for political points, said that he would stand by this court decision, which is all about things that have already happened and are basically done. The number of stops has actually fallen dramatically, which neither Kelly nor Braddon, for different reasons, wants to talk about.
Right.
It's going to be his department. I think a much more honest thing to do would say, I'm going to fix this. And if there are issues then, you know, I'll resolve them, or then people should go to court. But given that this all involved policies that were already done, saying let's get the courts involved, let's have a monitor of a sort that you can't necessarily predict where that's going to go, I thought was actually, without speaking to the merits of the decision at all, really irresponsible of de Blasio and political.
Okay. And shifting to what you wrote last week, you wrote a column about Brooklyn neighborhoods and how they're sort of their names are flourishing, but their characters are dying. And you're from New York, right? You're from Flatbush.
I am. My daughter is a fifth generation New Yorker.
What? Brooklyn. Wow. What? So what's your neighborhood called now if it's not called Flatbush?
Well,
your old neighborhood.
The neighborhood that refers to, which I've just moved out of, is Ditmas Park. And I would point out that all the names in the piece I wrote about this sort of explosion of names and flattening of character are really old names. And pretty much all of them have been around for at least 100 years. So it's not that people are just making this up realtor-style whole cloth, like Bococa or something. It's that they're finding older things to harken back to make precious distinctions between areas that in terms of who lives there and their commercial character are just not very distinguished. So you end up with like smaller and smaller variations, like the sort of bars and the different sorts of craft beers they serve, of names for really small discrete areas that have a lot to do with just branding and selling, as opposed to any sort of I suppose inherent character.
Well, what I found interesting about the article actually is yeah, there's the conversation that's been going around for a while about gentrification and the real estate markets coming in and changing the names. But I found it interesting that you pointed to the fact that there's a lot of people that are coming in, the younger generation, with absolutely no appreciation for the history of these neighborhoods. And when I first moved here, the reason I moved here was for that exact reason, because it was Brooklyn. My grandparents grew up in Brooklyn, and I actually lived out in Sheepshead Bay, or you know, Marine Park, somewhere in that neighborhood, and slowly move forward. Whereas nowadays you have a lot of these people moving into Williamsburg, which never, I mean, it was an industrial neighborhood, so I feel like a lot of the people there don't really have an appreciation for a lot of what was in Brooklyn outside. I mean, you hear it from, you know, hipsters or whatever you want to use a tired word, that they'll even say things like, well, I'll never go south of, you know, I don't know, Broadway,
Flushing
or something.
Avenue.
Yeah, whatever avenue. And it's kind of...
God bless them, right? like, you move to a place, you go there, and this is a place of self-creation, and that's constantly getting refreshed. And when you come here, you go to the place where you think you're going to be exciting people and parties around you, and, like, maybe people have sex with you and give you drugs. And, like, that's like a small little thing. And they're always going to have some neighborhood or patch where that is and identify that as the city. And then lots of them will go. Lots of them will, like, discover a larger, richer place. And lots of them will just be stuck there. Like, that's I want to grumble at it, but it took me 20 years, but I've sort of calmed down. That's just the natural process, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I find myself having to do that as well. But I think what I think frustrates me is that there's so much more. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a history guy that just likes to romanticize about things that aren't around anymore. But you know, I would like to think that South Brooklyn has more to offer than North Brooklyn.
I would agree. But I would also say when people discover things in this way, they tend to ruin them, at least for cranks like us. So, I mean, I really prefer the west side of Manhattan and the waterfront before there was this beautiful park there and it was of some use, when it was basically like just sort of a semi-abandoned former industrial zone from when New York really relied on its river. So I could walk there and look across to Jersey and have all that to myself. It was just incredible. And beautiful. I spent a lot of time there, and that was great. But it wasn't good for the city. It was my sort of private or secret thing. And I think it's sort of easy to over-elevate those, as opposed to whatever broader, civic culture we actually have.
Right, right. Oh, I know. Like, my grandparents used to warn me about the detriments of the Williamsburg area before I moved here, which is also interesting.
It was just a nothing area for a long time. And one of the nice things about moving there is there just isn't there's a really interesting history. There's an industrial history, there's an Italian history, a Jewish history, but it's not an area where like the architecture or the footprint speaks to much. And when you're in a period of self-discovery or creation, there's something refreshing about that for a lot of people, as opposed to being somewhere like, say, Sheepshead Bay, where you're really rooted in a coherent, practical community.
Right, right. That's been there for a long time. This is, like you said, Williamsburg is kind of a place where they were able to put their own footprint.
And anywhere you go that's a real ethnic neighborhood and has that sort of older character, including like the Italians in Williamsburg, or say where I live now in Windsor Terrace, 15, 20 years ago, there are things that are really unappealing about that. Like everything warm and community-oriented is quite the opposite if you're not part of that community. Like Windsor Terrace, for instance, was very Catholic, was really not friendly to, say, Jews or black people or Puerto Ricans, including Catholics. Mm-hmm. Very white Catholic. And they can be closed off in some unappealing ways.
Yeah, I think a lot of our friends are finding that about certain communities in Greenpoint as well right now.
Yeah.
What's your prescription, Harry? Like, how do we get people to start caring about, where they live enough to really sort of dig deeper than the superficial, hey, this bar has nifty light bulbs and 6 point on draft?
I'm working on that. I think that's something to do with reworking the entire American economy, dealing with the terrifying robot future, and shifting the way we live and think more generally. But that could be a bit, like, more immediately. I think there's excitement around de Blasio that has people and some younger people sort of keyed in on the city and the conversation here, and at least trying to engage in that in ways I think are very healthy. I think a calmer real estate market and a flatter Wall Street will actually do a lot of civic good for the city. That when you have too much churn and sort of too much separation, like centrifugal forces separating classes and types of people from one another, it tends to create a flatter, less appealing place. And we've had 30 years now, really since about 80, where Wall Street has become a larger and larger part of the American economy. Obviously there was a brief interruption in 08,
right.
And that's been incredibly good for New York, even as it's been unhealthy for the country at large, or incredibly good for New York wealth creation. But I think it's done a fair amount of damage to the fabric of much of the city as we've gotten a larger and more tightly woven central business district and then like residential areas that revolve directly around that.
What do you make of the news that came out either today or yesterday that Manhattan rents were sort of dipping a little bit, whereas Brooklyn rents kept on rising? What does that mean?
Can I use swear words?
Of course. Fuck yes.
Bullshit. Yeah. Just bullshit. If you look at all those reports that are put out by realtors, they're looking at really selective parts of Brooklyn that have become more and more extension of Manhattan and the parts where they're invested in and often give places names and are trying to sell. So the median rent in Brooklyn is nowhere near the median rent in Manhattan. Even though, like Manhattan gets poorer as you get farther north, still, past the park. I guess at this point, past, like say, depending on where on the island you are, like 125th or 145th or whatever, but No, like lots of Brooklyn is very affordable. As I was saying, you know, areas close to or in like immediate proximity to the central business district and those neighborhoods and like big patches of Brooklyn have gotten really expensive. Like the brownstone parts, the row houses that were built as more, most of them as middle class housing, and have been everything from like mansions to row houses in 100 years. And there's just a larger and larger block of them that are like mansions again. And that part of Brooklyn is really expensive. So, you know, you can pay a premium to live there if you're well off, if you're young, and don't have a lot of other expenses or whatever else, you can live farther out.
I can attest to the fact that Sheepshead Bay is much, much cheaper. Much, much cheaper, at least, than Park Slope.
Yes, it is. And much, much farther if you have to get into Manhattan, and that's you know, your central place.
Yep. Well, Harry, thank you very much for joining us. I know it's a conversation. We always enjoy having these conversations, and I think it's something that we'd enjoy having you back.
Yeah.
Well, cheers. Thanks again for having me on.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
So, Marnie.
Yes.
How do you feel about your neighborhood?
Upper East Side. When did that, you know, why?
Happen?
Well, yeah. You're a lifer.
38 years ago?
Yeah.
So I'm just stuck there, really. I don't like it.
You know you can move, right?
In our conversation?
No. Like you can move elsewhere.
Sort of. No, I can. It's like golden handcuffs.
All right.
It's like a good deal, so I can, but I can't.
I kind of have that deal as well.
What do you do?
Yeah.
I mean, but, you know, it's...
Eventually, I'd like to think that I would leave, but...
If you could live anywhere in the city, where would you live? Or if you could live anywhere in the world, where would you live?
Well, I was talking tonight, maybe Austin, Texas.
Mm. I like that city.
We've been talking about it. He spent some time in Austin.
It's so livable. But it's like Never Never Land, though. It's like you go there and you never really grow up.
That's
ever.
Like Portland.
Well.
But nicer weather.
Yeah.
See, if I was to live in New York, I'd want to live somewhere where it was just fantastical. Like you know,
where?
Like some tropical place or Paris or something like that. I don't
or
know.
A Florida oh. retirement community?
Or a Florida
you
retirement
community. If you left New York, you could live anywhere.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like I've been to a lot of places. I got to say, Austin is really a good one.
So besides the weather, what else is so great about
it? It's casual. I don't know. It's very comfortable. It's friendly and artistic, but not... Well, yeah, kind of too much, but...
But it's a one-street town. That's why I'd always know. There's too much traffic.
Well, that's...
now we're talking too... Yeah, it's very old.
Too much traffic.
I'm a crank.
All the traffic hurts my lumbar.
So, Marnie, we're going to ask you questions about you as opposed to your neighborhood.
Okay.
But before that, let's play a couple tracks.
Please.
From your most recent album.
Oh, do we have to? Can we just talk?
We got some pizza to nosh on. I'll leave you guys with this thought before we go to break. It is Bob Barker's 90th birthday.
Really?
Wow. Yep. I just got
Happy birthday, Bob.
I just got an email from the Animal Something Society.
He was having an affair with the main lady like 5 years ago.
No way. Really?
No, he got in trouble for having an affair with
one of
the models.
Like recently?
Like
wow.
Maybe
when
a decade
he was still,
ago.
Yeah, when he was still on the show.
Sorry, when he was...
Pre-Drew
Carey.
<He's
80.
laughs>
This is Year of the Glad, by the way, from Chronicles of Marnia, which we're going to talk about.
Conviction.
Today's program is brought to you by Regional Access. Regional Access is a regional distributor committed to creating sustainable economies throughout the Northeast. This community-oriented company was built on a vision of providing ecologically responsible and ethically produced food to area consumers. During a typical week at the Regional Access warehouse, they help move thousands of pounds of natural and grass-fed meat, gallons of farm-fresh dairy, and tons of organic and specialty foods from producer to market. Having been in the distribution business for almost 25 years, Regional Access's experience and knowledge make them uniquely equipped to build out their region's food web. Up in the Finger Lakes, Regional Access will continue to champion the region's bounty and work toward a sustainable food system for the entire Northeast. For more information, visit regionalaccess.net.
Man, those commercials keep getting longer.
Man, 25 years is a long time to be in the distribution business.
I could have trucked some fruit. Blah, blah. I could have trucked some food down the street in that amount of time. So, Marnie Stern.
Yeah.
Chronicles of Marnia.
Yeah.
Are you a big fantasy fan?
No.
No?
Mm-mm.
You're not a big C.S. Lewis fan, are you?
No.
It was just a pun that you wanted to roll with?
Mm-hmm.
Most girlfriends I had were always
fantasy people?
Yeah. Chronicles of Narnia. What's the other ones? Tolkien books.
Well, like Chronicles of Narnia is like fantasy, but it's like C.S. Lewis. He's kind of, you know, with the Christian allegories and whatnot. And
isn't that the Alice in Wonderland person?
No, he's a moralist. Dana, you want to jump in here at some point?
He wrote this book called The Screwtape Letters. It's like about Christianity.
The Screwtape Letters.
He was really like big into that imagery.
You guys are all...
Marnie's next album is going to be The Screwtape.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually not a bad idea.
My best friend has, you know, young adult is so popular, like Hunger Games stuff. So I've read so much of that stuff, but she's had me read something this past month. It's porn. It's soft porn.
Really? What is it?
Is it the, what's that book? The,
it's
not 50 Shades of Grey. That's not
no, not the Divergent thing. That's a whole other thing. I read that stuff too. It's called, Fey Fever and Blood Fever and Dark Fever. And
the Fever series?
The Fever series!
Does this have,
I'm just guessing.
Does it have Fabio on the cover?
It's about... part of it is about these basically like underworld aliens that have so much sexual prowess that they bring a woman to her knees and she can't resist. And
Jesus Christ!
Wow. So you were just saying you don't, you're not a fan of fantasy.
Well,
but
that kind of fantasy, man.
Well, I mean, I think most of us are into that kind of fantasy.
Yeah, we all want to fuck undersea aliens.
I guess so.
Well, since we're on the topic, here's a question I've been wanting to ask you for some time now. As part of your record promotion, you did a
date
giveaway.
Mm-hmm.
Did it actually come to fruition?
I did it seriously, trying to go on a date. And I went on a nice date with a guy, and it was good. And then I went on tour, and I was texting him from the van, you know, the whole time. And then I got back. I, like, didn't hear from him towards the end. And then I got back and I texted. I said, I'm back. You want to hang out? And he's like, sent me this crazy breakup letter. Like, I met somebody else and I'm really sorry, but I can't go out with you again. And I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I don't need to get dumped. Like,
yeah. Wow. I guess you thought he was being courteous, maybe?
I think so, but it didn't feel good.
Like a paper letter?
A long email.
That should be the record promotion.
Yeah,
his
letter. I can't get it. It doesn't work in my world life stuff.
Dating?
Well, maybe it's turning a corner, but generally, not really.
Well, see, what I was interested in is there was a stipulation that it couldn't be female.
I'm not gay.
That totally killed a fantasy of mine.
Well, come
only
on.
Derek.
No, I'm joking. But I thought that was a little bit unfair.
Though, when I had the kissing booth thing, I will tell you, oddly, all the women who did it tried to shove the tongue in my mouth.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they got really brave.
Did any succeed?
For $100, one did, in Rochester, New York.
Roger, see upstate New York, man.
Mm-hmm.
Things get crazy up there.
Then they go to Florida and hang out in retirement communities. So you play... Okay, you don't have a band in New York, which we've kind of addressed. So
yeah.
who's your band then?
It changes often. But right now, it stayed... Nithin Calvacoda is the bass player, and I've been playing with him for a long time. And right now, this guy Mason is the drummer, and he's... cool. And, you know, I do a three-piece. It's easier that way. I'd like to do another guitar player, but it's so expensive.
And then they always compete with you for, like, you know,
showing. I wouldn't mind that. That would be fun. That would be fun.
Well, that's when I see you, that's always the, well, outside of your own shows, you're always guesting. I remember, you know, Day, Month, Year, you did it.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
And then, as we already mentioned, Diarrhea Planet.
Yeah, I like having, I like playing with people, but it is expensive to have a whole other person to bring.
Well, why don't you just have a New York band then?
Wouldn't that be a good idea for a contest, though? Like,
I'm not
like
that bright, you guys.
What?
Wouldn't that be, yeah, that's a
like,
good idea.
That's your contest, like, come on, like, play guitar with me. And
no, because I've had stuff where people have said, like, I've been at a party, and once, and a guy said, dude, you're Marnie Stern, I can shred you under the table. And I said, oh, really? Cool. And he said, I want to go on tour with you. I said, okay, come into practice. Just because I didn't think anyone would say that unless they could play. Couldn't play at all.
Oh, wow. How did that, man. So you had to, like, politely ask him to leave?
Yeah. Actually, yeah.
Sorry, holy man. Shit. Yeah, I guess it's like out. It's like the same reason why if you challenge Michael Jordan to like a one-on-one game.
But do people do that?
I bet they do, but I bet it's like one of those things where if you have to accept one, you have to accept them all. So you're saying that like you already accepted that one and you've learned your lesson.
Well, I learned my lesson from that one, so I can't do that again.
Right, right. Now, but most of the people you play with are based on the West Coast? Is that?
No, all over.
All over?
It happens one person. The drums are more difficult because they're so difficult.
Intrigued, yeah.
So that's more like, oh, I know this guy who does this or who does that, who does this. And then, and that's how that works out. But I guess that's what it mostly is, has been searching for drums. And that's why it's more difficult, because it's very specific and it's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, you've had some. You play with Zach Hill, right?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't you? Yeah, I remember. And that was actually, I think, maybe the first time I've seen you at South by Southwest many, many years ago.
Yeah.
Well, many for me, not for you.
He plays on all the records except the last one. Kid Millions plays on the last one.
Yeah. Well, those are some pretty good names to throw around.
It's tough. Yeah. And then people get really into wanting to do it because they want to do it, but then it must be a tough thing to say, hey, play like this person.
Yeah, play like Zach Hill.
Yeah, you could put yourself into it a little, but not really. Like, really be like this. So, it's maybe a strange thing.
Yeah.
But I've had really good luck, and everybody's been great. It's just, you know, it's life. Everybody is busy. I'm doing this band, I'm doing that, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. Like, so it keeps changing. But I like that, because you don't want to be with the same people.
Maybe we've just, I think you just, right when you
bands say, hate each other. It's good to keep changing it up. No, really.
Maybe this is the key to your, you know, the relationship side as well. You just, you can't focus on any one person. You always got
No, but you know what I mean. I don't know what it is with bands. I do not know, but you just end up hating each other.
I think the tour life has a lot to do with that, though. It's kind of like how when you're dating someone or like
dating
out with
it
someone.
Doesn't happen. Well, it's
but,
on tour, that
right?
It happens.
But what I'm saying, my
you
analogy was going to be yes,
yes.
Once you cohabitate together, yeah. It's like you see a different side. You're like, oh, I don't want to see your dirty underwear.
But you date someone and you're with them all the time, and it doesn't happen. Why does it happen when you're in a band?
Well, because you're seeing the, you know, once you like start touring, I was making the analogy to the touring part, because once you start touring with people, then you see like a, you know,
but you
side.
Meet a partner that you're dating and you're with them 24/7 and you see all those different sides and you're not like ugh.
But once you move in, I think that
maybe
kind of, but that person isn't with you like at your job and then with you when you're eating dinner and then
I
with
guess
you
so.
You know what I mean? It's like
I guess
every
so.
I
guess
know.
So I mean, really, that is what it's like. Mm. But now that there are phones, that kind of breaks up. It's like there's another person always in the room because you just look at your phone all the time.
Yeah.
You don't have to, like, talk.
That's something to be said about all the people that say that cell phones are rude. It's actually keeping the bonds of relationships together because I don't have to listen to you talk all
so
the time.
So we don't get into a big fight at the IHOP. I'm going to stare at my phone.
So what are your plans then for, I mean, I know because of the conversation I already had with your booking agent that you have some early shows in 2014, I was going to say 13.
I am playing, can you believe it's going to be 2014? That's no.
I know, it's scary.
I am playing in Toronto on Valentine's Day for some festival. I don't know what.
Valentine's Festival?
Valentine's Festival. And then I'm doing a tour with Diarrhea Planet. Maybe the end of February, early March, maybe.
Excellent, excellent.
And that's it. You know, I'm working on a new record, and that's what's going on.
So what are your, how deep are you into the record then?
Deep.
Yeah.
I've been up since yesterday. I mean, I haven't slept yet since yesterday. I did a all-nighter and then into the day. And then all of a sudden I was like, it's 4 o'clock. Wait, I've been up all night. I was in my pajamas, like hair crazy on it. I was like, I gotta go to Brooklyn. And then was running all crazy, trying to figure out how to do it.
I mean, that's something, but like, I think, you know, I loathe to bring up the topic of like female musicians and male musicians, even though I do it all the time.
I don't know why you do that.
Every time.
I don't know why you do that.
But the one thing I was gonna say is that. Yeah, see, now I was going to make a really...
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say you're very prolific. And I think that's something... Okay, I don't want...
I'm not, though, for the amount of time that I put in. For the amount of effort that I put in, I am the worst musician that ever existed.
Well, I meant...
For the billions of hours that I sit there doing it, I can't believe how bad I am. It's impossible.
That's like me and the internet. No. I'm just not that good at it.
With porn, maybe. I mean, really.
I'm an expert. No. What I meant is you're prolific in putting out records. And that's something that I feel like, again, Dana's here, so I don't want to get, she's going to get mad at me.
I'm not going to get mad. Go on,
but
Derek.
Do you agree? Don't, okay. No, but what I'm, Derek, let me ask you this.
All right.
Why male, female? You see somebody.
Oh, no.
But just in general, let me ask you this. You see a band play. Do you think...
Well,
of course you think there's a man up there, Derek. There's a woman up there, but don't you generally think, is that good? Do I like it? Is that not good?
Here's my theory on that, and I think it's a little bit unfair for guys because most women will look up there and immediately think, oh, that guy's attractive or not attractive. Like when you're
What the fuck are you talking about?
No, so for a guy to say
you
that's
think
what he
that
does.
I go to a show and the thing I think when I'm listening to music is do they look good or not?
No, not as your reason for listening to them, but I think it's inherent that everyone looks at someone on stage. Anyway, but that's not my reason for appreciating a band either way.
Okay.
But my that's not what I wanted. I am not.
This is a safe space, Derek. This is a safe space.
It's not really though. No.
But no, what I meant to say is, if I was to make any broad assumptions, which are horrible to make, but you don't see.
Go ahead. I'm all for. What? Do
but
you
no,
really
what I would
think?
Say that
I want to know what you really think.
No, I mean, I gravitate towards the.
Go on. Tell us your broad assumption.
No, there's not. You don't see a lot of female musicians that are as prolific as you are in putting out a ton of records as a solo musician. That's
yeah,
what I was going to say.
Yeah, of course all
you
over
do.
The place.
What are you talking about?
Yes, maybe not. Maybe not the same genre of music, but they're every. Yes, you do.
All right, I just dug myself a horrible hole.
What does that even mean? I don't even.
Whisper all your broad assumptions into my ear.
But what I'm saying is it ruins it for everyone if you're thinking that's a lady up there, that's pretty cool, or that's a man up there, that's pretty cool.
Do you feel that
cool.
in your career that you've sort of been twisted or bent
to be marketed
in that fashion? You know what I mean?
I don't know about that stuff.
Well, you have a label that I think is...
Yeah, I'm never.
As appropriate
I'm not
for that
a dresser upper. Do it crazy, because I've just never been like that. But I think the easiest thing is always to grab on to the angle. So my angle is I play guitar and I'm a lady, yeah. And then I go with it because I want attention.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and
that's
I
like the Trojan horse for like your art,
but. But, I've always, I think I'm very, fair. Well, no, what a snot. What I'm saying is, I judge music based on taste and what I like and what I don't like.
Of course.
And I've never, ever, ever in my life thought, wow. That girl is really good, or that guy is really good. Ever. I am always just thinking, this music is terrible. Well, this music's kind of interesting. This music is blah blah blah.
See, I'm sorry, I don't believe that.
That's like
I don't see colors, you know. Promise. I don't see race or something like that.
Maybe with
impossible.
Other stuff I don't do it. With music I But and I
different,
hold on,
a different question.
That no. I do.
Okay. Do you consider yourself an artist? Because you were very self-critical earlier about
Yeah.
You consider yourself an artist.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I should be a better one by now, but yes.
Okay.
Well, yes, but I'm still critical.
Right.
But that's what I'm saying. I'm critical of everything that I think isn't.
Right, and my point is not. I don't see it that way either. I'm on base with
I'm
you.
Not, okay.
But my point is a little bit different.
Maybe there's a difference between going to a show and seeing a show versus just getting a record and listening to it.
Yes, true. And let me put it to you this way.
Do you feel differently when you just listen to it? Like,
oh, of course. I mean, like, we listen to all different kinds of bands and music all the time. And for me, it's, you know, I'll just half the time I'm like, who is this band? You know, it's not even like a matter of. Of who you know who they are, what sex they
are.
That
person sounds hot.
No. I almost like to listen to stuff without context because then it's like I have no preconceived notion of what I should think. My point to you though is get rid of sex involved in everything we're saying. There's still more attractive people tend to be more successful at. Music.
Everything.
Yes, at everything.
That's
at life.
Everything.
I know, but so that's what I'm saying.
No,
is that's why
you sound
except
like
for
my
like
mother.
Undertakers.
You sound like my mother. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
That's
if
true,
you,
though.
But if
for
you
anything.
Were,
yeah, but not just music.
Okay, wait. If you lived your life thinking, my best friend when we were like 25 said, well, and you know what? Maybe you're right and maybe we were wrong. But we said to each other, well, you don't get anything based off your looks, so we better try and figure out something to do that's good. And that's all we did. And I looked homeless for like a decade. And then, bullshit. I worked very hard to try and make stuff that was good and not.
But I don't think it applies to music though, because people turn to music when they don't have anything else. Like when they want to play.
Oh, that's true.
You know, like if you're not attractive, you're like, well, I get exactly. Like I have to do something else with it. Like why would more handsome people be more successful?
Maybe you're talking about in the Grammy world. Like
or just in the visible world. The world that's has a lot
Joe,
of money.
Joe, can you get my
world,
sigh as
mean?
Audible
no,
as
no,
possible?
I'm being serious. Like the world that has a lot of money behind it. You're talking about the world that has a lot of money behind
it.
That so they're going to prop up their idols.
Maybe
that are
I
attractive.
Am thick-headed
there
and just looking at it
there are many
like,
artists that I see that have okay, but wait, you're talking about looks. I
don't even
find
mean
that,
looks.
Okay,
I find
but
all,
I find a I lot just, of artists like 99% of artists who are into hips, I don't know what this means, but like hip stuff and know how to have connections and schmooze and know how to dress and all that stuff. They are way ahead, but what I've learned from doing this for so many years is like, blah, blah, they go up for a second, and then it's like, whatever happened to those guys?
Right.
And they're gone.
There
right
definitely
away.
Needs to be substance. I'm not making. See, I guess I
thought there didn't need to be substances.
Derek wouldn't be hosting this show if he weren't so attractive.
If
so he just feels guilty because he got this gig.
God knows, there's no, God knows there's no substance. That's for sure. Well, if I had to summarize it, I would say, see, this is the problem. I am a total, like, I find myself gravitating towards mostly female bands.
Really?
Yeah.
I have not listened to any new music in 5 or 6 years. Pretty
really,
much.
Though? Come on. That's not true.
You just listen to Chronicles of Marnia on repeat?
I've never heard that.
but no albums. Like, someone hasn't given you an album and been like, this is really good.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, a couple here and there, but not like I used to, like, need it, no.
Yeah, I think that's
do you find that's, like, an inspiration thing? Like, that clouds
it might
your
be, like, when I turned 26, I started thinking, I don't know, like.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's a product of my advanced state of age.
Yeah, Derek is always saying, hey, this sounds exactly like something that came out 10 years ago.
But I will say that, wait, what was I going to say? That it's interesting. I get letters and talk to people at shows who are my age, and they say, as you get older, and I forgot about this, and it's true, it's harder to feel as passionate about music in a certain way. Like, it's hard to get so excited as you did when you were younger. It's hard to get all zhuzhed up and And so when sometimes I meet people and they say, so thanks for making me excited, that's a true thing too. It is harder to get amped up. I don't know why that is, but it is.
I agree with that. But I think also a lot of that has to do with what Dana was just saying, is that it's so rare that you come across something that's like truly unique or truly different, especially if you've been in music. It's when it becomes your job, you know what I mean? It's like you're just around. It's the same reason like people who play professional sports, when they retire, they like will never play it again, or like just play it like occasionally, you know?
Yeah.
What do you think, Chris, when you're playing professional sports?
As a professional sports player, I'm still at the prime of my career in it right now. I'd rather not discuss it.
But it is fun to me when I hear people doing nutty stuff, you know, like I like Yoko Ono because what a crazy bitch. Like,
see, now there's another prime example.
She's a lunatic and most it's people, cool.
Yeah. I think she's hot. I'm just gonna throw that out there.
For sex?
I mean, I would be afraid of injuring her, but
peeing
yes.
in the vagine.
I'm just
going to
throw it out there. I think she's hot.
I think she's like 75.
I think she hit 80, didn't she?
Yeah, she's yeah. 80. Yeah.
She was older than John when they met, so she's up there.
She's not as old as Bob Barker.
You wouldn't put that peen in there.
I wouldn't put it past me.
That's a different radio show.
And on that note, I'm getting the signal from Joe. No, Marty, thank you so much for coming by. You are, as I tell most people that come by, you are welcome anytime.
Thank you.
And I know every time I see you and we hang out and we're not getting you in trouble with articles, it's always fun to hang out
thanks,
with you.
Thanks, Derek. Thanks, guys.
Dana, thank you for stopping by.
Of course.
Thanks, Harry. Thanks, Derek. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Good night.
And hopefully I'll see you tomorrow or Saturday at our parties.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.